Okay, let's open our Bibles to 1 Samuel 28. We're looking at a time that is very significant in both the life of David and the life of King Saul. And the theme of this time period is about encouragement for David especially, because this is a time when David lost everything. He lost his wives, his children, his army, everything. In fact, his men were thinking of stoning him. King David, who never got injured in any battle, was the men were thinking of killing him because they were so upset. But this is our 11th hour together. Encouragement, hope when all is lost. And David lost everything but God. And that's really the lesson for all of us, what it's like when there's no one left in our family, no one left of our friends, no one left of those that are closest to us, our children or our wife. All we have left is God. And that's the lesson that's most wonderful to learn. By the way, this is a picture of Nagasaki. You remember Japan during World War II? When the Americans dropped the very first or the second atomic bomb, that's what the city looked like, and everything was lost. It just, it was a terrible, terrible destruction. Basically, David writes psalms from all these time periods. And in my Bible, I've noted, and I've been telling you about it, that in 1 Samuel, starting in 1 Samuel 21, he writes Psalm 52. In the middle of it, Psalm 56, Psalm 34. In 1 Samuel 22, he writes more of the cave psalms, Psalm 57, Psalm 142. This was a time when he felt abandoned. We already went through that, Psalm 13. Then when we get to 1 Samuel 23, and David is in the strongholds of En-Gedi, and in the wilderness, he writes Psalm 63, Psalm 54, when the Ziphites betray him. When he is at En-Gedi, he writes probably Psalm 35 and 36, and then in chapter 25, most likely David wrote about the fool has said in his heart, Psalm 14, and Psalm 53. But now let's get to 1 Samuel 28, and we're going to always start with gold. And what I want you to see, that David has survived. Now, if you remember, in 1 Samuel 27, it's the height of Saul's attack. King Saul has sent his army, thousands of troops, and they're looking everywhere for David. They're combing the wilderness, the caves, the valleys. Thousands of troops are just, it's like a kind of a search for David. They're just spreading out and they're walking, looking under every bush. They're trying to kill David. That's chapter 27. Now in chapter 28, the first two verses, and Gold is going to read verse 1 and Pauline gets verse 2. Listen to what David does, because David survives Saul's hunt for him and finds a place of safety. Okay, verses 1 and 2.
In those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel, and Achish said to David, "You should assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men."
So David said to Achish, "Surely you know what your servant can do." And Achish said to David, "Therefore, I will make you one of my chief guardians forever."
Whoa, the Philistine, there were five lords or presidents or generals of the Philistines. One of them, Achish, the king or the commander, or he was the head of this whole region. He picked David as his bodyguard. He trusted David that much. I mean, this, if you stop and think about it, David was an amazing person. That his enemies trusted him so much that they would let him become their bodyguard. I mean, the Philistine commander asked David to guard him. That's how honest David was. That's how blessed by God David was. So David has survived. He's not running from Saul. Now he's safe. He's got the whole Philistine army around him. Saul backs off. All of the armies, the thousands of troops that Saul, King Saul, has sent against David, they see him go into the Philistine camp and they go like this. We're not pursuing him any longer. And they go back and report to King Saul, David is with Achish. All of his soldiers are with Achish. They're safe from us. We can't go get them. So David has survived. But now, starting in verse 4, I'll read verse 3, then we'll come across to Theode. He'll get 4. Joseph. I'm so sorry. Because I left out Joseph, he gets an extra verse. Okay, so you get 4 and 5, and then we'll get over to you, Theode. But look at verse 3 in your Bible, because it's going to take us a little while to go through this. But we all of a sudden get exposed to the underworld, to what most of Greek and Roman mythology is about. It's all about this place where the departed, this is what the Egyptian pyramids are about. All of this speculation about the future. But it says this in verse 3, now Samuel had died. Samuel. Now remember, Samuel was the judge over the nation of Israel that anointed King Saul and anointed David. And he's the one, he just bowed his head in prayer when the Philistine armies early on were coming toward Israel and everybody was scared to death. And Samuel just bowed his head and raised his hands. And the people thought they were doomed, and God put lightning and thunder on the Philistines so much that they just fled away and were totally defeated. So Samuel is kind of like next to Moses, the most monumental person in Israel. But look at verse 3, he died. And all Israel lamented for him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. So mediums and spiritists are what we would call witches. So here in 1 Samuel 28, we're looking at the witch at Endor. Now remember, God consistently says his people are to have nothing to do with witches, witchcraft, astrology, that's the stars, mediums, those are people that communicate with the dead, anything like that. God is offended by that, and we offend him when we have anything to do with it. So Saul had done what he was supposed to do early in his kingship. It says he put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. But now listen as Joseph reads verses 4 and 5, because something happens.
Verse 4. The Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shechem, and Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly.
So now King Saul, without Samuel around, remember Samuel could pray and the Lord would defeat the Philistines. Saul's facing them all by himself. And the Philistines, actually, if you want to look over here on your map, have come up. They live down here in the coastal plain, and they've come up this plain, and they've come through this pass, and they're right here in the area of Gilboa, which is just down, just a little bit southwest of the Sea of Galilee. So these are the mountains of Gilboa. All the Philistine armies have come up through this pass in all their chariots. They've come into the Jezreel Valley. By the way, this is the place where Armageddon is for the future battle. This is always this triangle right here. You can see dark, dark, dark. This triangle right here is the plain of Jezreel. And so Saul is there, and as Joseph read, they were encamped, and Saul was afraid, verse 5, and trembled. I mean, he is scared to death. So this is going to set up the moment, because usually we do things we shouldn't do when we're afraid. Remember, the most repeated negative prohibition in the Bible, the thing God says don't do the most number of times, is fear not. Now think about that. This is the most repeated negative prohibition in the Bible. Fear not. Why? Because it says in 2 Timothy 1:7, God has not given us a spirit of fear. When we're afraid of the storm, when we're afraid of terrorists, when we're afraid of the future, when we're afraid of anything, God is not the one that makes us afraid. That realm is Satan's realm. Satan thrives in fear. That's where he works. And he gets people afraid, and they start doing things they shouldn't do. And when Saul, as Joseph read in verse 5 of 1 Samuel 28, when Saul gets afraid, Saul starts going the wrong direction. So Theode is going to read to us verse 6 and 7 of 1 Samuel 28.
1 Samuel 28, verse 6. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Then said Saul unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor.
At Endor. Thank you, Theode. That's this word right here. Endor is a place. Endor, in fact, today, if you go right to where I was showing you, right over here by the mountains of Gilboa, right at the foot of the mountains of Gilboa, there are three palm trees still there marking the site, the spring, around which the city of Endor was built in the time of David and Saul. And so Saul's advisors, his military people, say there is one witch left that we know of, the witch at Endor. And so Saul hears about that, and in verse 7, he said to his servants, find me a woman who is a medium that I may go and inquire. And they said, she's at Endor. So look at verse 8. Saul disguises himself. Now remember, as the king, he wore very special outfits, just like you see in movies or in different paintings. Kings were dressed like the king. So he disguises himself in verse 8. And he asked this woman in verse 8 at Endor to conduct a seance. What is a seance? A seance is where a witch asks the demons to come forth from the underworld and tell them secrets. And this is very frequent. You can get this anywhere in the world. I'm sure there's someone in this area that is a medium, that is a connector. All over America, there are people like this, and they are involved in witchcraft. So Saul goes to her. Now watch what happens. Verse 9 or verse 8, bring me up the person I shall name. And verse 9, the woman says, wait a minute. You know what Saul has done, how he cut off the mediums. And verse 10, Saul swore to her and says, nothing harmful will come upon you. Now, what's really interesting is, if this woman was really supernatural, she should have known Saul was sitting there. You understand? See, Jesus because he's omniscient, he always could read minds and hearts and know. Demons, because they are everywhere around us, they know what's going on. But this woman, at this moment, is not listening to the demons, who were probably saying, watch out, here comes Saul. She was just fearful for her life. And so Saul swore in verse 10, no harm. Then the woman said in verse 11, who should I bring up? And she said, Samuel. Now look what happens. And this is what I want to show on this chart. Verse 12. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, what? You have deceived me. You are Saul. Now wait a minute. This woman was used to seeing demons. She worked with demons. What are demons? Demons are fallen angels. Demons are the ones that are part of the netherworld that are totally connected with the grave and Sheol and Hades. These are fallen angelic beings, and she was used to them, but all of a sudden, a real person comes up from beneath. So this woman in Endor, inside of her tent, has King Saul here, and she prays, and all of a sudden, this man wearing this long, you see how it describes him? An old man, verse 14, covered with a mantle, and Saul perceived it was Samuel, and Saul got on his face on the ground. So this woman brings up this man wearing this, like, covering. And he comes up, it says, comes up from where? And it says, I saw a spirit, verse 13, ascending out of the earth, coming up. Where was Saul or Samuel coming from? He's coming from this, you see this area in the center, Sheol, Hades. He came up from there, and this circle here is representing the earth. He came up. So here is the earth. Here is Sheol. Here was the witch at Endor, and Saul came up out of Samuel came up out of Hades to the surface and stood in front of her in her tent. That scared her to death. You notice what she does. It says she screamed with a loud voice, verse 12. And she says, you are Saul. Don't be afraid. He said, what did you see? And the woman said, verse 13, I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. And verse 14, Saul said to her, what was his form? And she said, an old man coming up. He's covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived it was Samuel. And now Samuel said, now verse 15, this is something this woman's never seen before. She's used to working with demons that masquerade. See, demons will tell you anything you want to hear and are deceivers. But now she's got the prophet of God himself, and it scares her to death. And Saul is laying on the ground. And Samuel says in verse 15, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Samuel said, I came up from the grave. I came up from Hades. I came up from Sheol. I came up from the grave. I came up from this place. He was in this part of it called Abraham's bosom. Look how it has two parts. There's the paradise part, and there's the place of torment. These two parts of the grave. So the grave down there, or Sheol, has two parts. It has the good part, and that's where all the saints were, Adam and Eve and Enoch and Abraham and Moses, all of them. Then it had the bad part, that is where all the wicked, godless ones were in torment. It actually says that they were in torment, great agony, Luke 16, 23, 24, 25. And so this is pain on the bad side of the grave. And then this is like paradise. It's great comfort. And it's just like the entryway to heaven. And so Samuel is in the good side. Abraham's bosom, Jesus calls it. Paradise is what he calls it to the thief on the cross in Luke 23:43. And so he says, why did you bother me and bring me up? And so Saul answered, verse 15, I am deeply distressed. The Philistines make war against me. God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets or dreams. Therefore, I called you that you might reveal to me what I should do. Verse 16, then Samuel said, why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and become your enemy? Wow. Did you catch that? The reason I bring that up is it says in the book of James that when Christians love the world, God becomes their enemy also. So Christians can have God adversarially toward you. And that is when we disobey him and go against his word. And verse 17, the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me. Samuel said, just what I told you happened. The Lord has torn his kingdom out of your hand. He's given it to your neighbor David. And because you, verse 18, did not obey the voice of the Lord, you did not execute his fierce wrath on whom? Who comes up in this verse? Yeah, the Amalekites, Amalek, King Agag. We went through that last week. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you. Moreover, the Lord, verse 19, will deliver Israel. Now remember where they are. They're over here. And Israel is on Mount Gilboa, and the Philistines are down here. And the Philistines have brought up all their lords, all their armies, their chariots, and they're coming up, and they're camped there ready to fight. And Saul gets the word that the Philistines, verse 19, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me, and the Lord will deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Whoa. He says it again. Samuel's standing here. He came up from the grave. And what he says is, tomorrow, Saul, you and your sons are going to be down here with me. Down here in Hades, in Sheol, in the grave. And those who die trusting in the Lord go to paradise, to Abraham's bosom, to the good side. But those who die with their sin go to the painful side. But do you remember they can see each other? Do you remember that? Do you remember Luke 16? They can see each other in the grave. The rich man could see Lazarus in comfort while he was touched by the flames. So let's just go on a quick tour through the underworld. It starts right up here on the side. There's a little bump. That's paradise in the Garden of Eden. After mankind fell, paradise is gone from the Garden of Eden. Most likely God put it down in this place because Jesus said to the thief on the cross, you'll be with me today in paradise. Jesus did not ascend to his Father until after the resurrection. Before that, he didn't ascend. It says he descended, 2 Peter, and he went down there to that two-compartment thing, and he proclaims liberty to the captives and takes them with him, and paradise goes up there. You see it up above there in heaven. The next time we see paradise is in Revelation, and it says it's the paradise of God in heaven. So he takes the believers with him after the cross, from paradise down there to paradise in heaven. You notice that over here there's another circle. There is another place down there. This is just the grave and Sheol, but there is also a prison for demons. And a lot of us don't think much about that, but the prison for demons in Revelation 9 is where those horrific creatures that come out during the tribulation are. It's called Tartarus. Some of those that are there, it's also called the abyss or the pit. Some of those never get out. They're chained forever down there. Others are allowed out by God. That's a little different than this place we're looking at here, Hades, Sheol, the grave. Now, what is not in view is this, and don't ever get mixed up about it. The lake of fire, Revelation 20, Hell, Jesus talked about so much, Gehenna, no one now is there. That is not this place called the grave, the pit, Sheol, and all that. That is yet future. And so the lesson back here in 1 Samuel 28 is, immediately, verse 20, Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him. Verse 21, the woman came and saw that he was severely troubled and said, hey, let me help you. And so she cooks a meal. So Saul, King Saul, had his last supper with a witch. How do you like that? Isn't that something to think about, last supper that Saul had was with a witch? Well, let's go to chapter 29, and we're going to have Rodelio, because Saul goes on and the events take place. He dies in chapter 30. But Rodelio is going to start in verse 1 and 2 of chapter 29. Now follow along, because I want you to see what happens. 1 and 2, please.
Chapter 29. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rear ward with Achish.
And once again, the same thing happens we saw happen the last time when David was in Gath. Everybody is looking at him and they're saying, wait a minute, isn't this the one? And look at verse 5 now. Isn't this David of whom they sang? And this is 1 Samuel 29, 5. Saul slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands. And everyone starts getting nervous. And what they say is, the Philistines were saying, if David changes sides during the battle, we're all facing the Israel army with King Saul. All the Philistines were saying this. Here we are with our swords fighting like this, and David is behind us with his army, and an attack, an unsuspecting attack from the rear, an insider attack, would be devastating the Philistine army, because there'd be enemies in front of them and enemies behind them. You understand how dangerous this is in their mind. And so they say, whoa, we don't want this. So look at verse 6, and Boy is going to read verse 6 to us, because this is what they decide to do.
Verse 6, so Achish called David and said to him, as surely as the Lord lives, you have been reliable, and I would be pleased to have you serve with me in the army. From the day you came to me until now, I have found no fault in you, but the rulers don't approve of you.
The rulers were afraid that David would turn on them. And so, look up at the board. These first 11 verses in 1 Samuel 29 is a calm. David has been accepted in chapter 28. He's protected by the Philistines. David has moved his men into Philistine territory. They've moved into a city called Keilah. And it's their own place, and David is staying there. And now he gets told to go home. He doesn't have to even go to the battle. David is up here he's come up here, and he's with them in their staging area, and they send him home down to here. Okay, so this is, for David, this is kind of like, Saul's not chasing me. The Philistines aren't chasing me. I can go home and see my wife and the kids. And David, you know, was still, he had flocks, he had sheep and goats, he had tents, he had a family. There were 600 families that traveled with him, these 600 men that he met in the cave. And they get to go home, and they kind of were looking forward to it. But now look what happens in chapter 30. Okay, so the chapter 29 finishes out. David goes home, departs in verse 11 of 29 to the land of the Philistines, down here. So David goes back down here. The Philistines go to Jezreel there, and David goes out in the Negev, and that's where we come to chapter 30. So now we're going to get to Joella, and Joella wins the prize. She gets to read 2 verses, 1 and 2. So look at 1 Samuel 30, verses 1 and 2.
Verse 1, now when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, and the Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag, they had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire. Verse 2, and taken captive the woman and all who were in it, both small and big. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way.
Thank you for that good reading. So let's think about what's happened here. David has gone from this calm period where David is looking at the Philistines are still his friends. He is still living in their territory. His biggest enemy, King Saul, is going to battle. Now, David doesn't know that Saul is going to die. So don't think that David is happy that Saul is dying, because it doesn't say that. But what is going on is that David, unsuspecting, goes home. Now, I want you to think about that, because this is what I call here the acid test. David goes to Ziklag. Not Keilah, it's Ziklag is the name of the city. This is a city that David was allowed by the Philistines. It was down in the, below the Philistine territory here in the desert called the Negev. And David had, when you read in the text, he had killed all the inhabitants there, taken over the city, set up his family. And if you think about it, if this is a city with 600 families, what they have to have is places for all their animals. They have these animal pens, because wealth in the ancient times was with your animals. So they had sheep, they had goats, and they had camels, and they had donkeys. So all these animals, just like today, you know, if you have chickens, you have to have a chicken house. If you have all these grazing animals, to keep them safe, they had these pens. So this city had all these, sheepfolds and places for the families. They had their tents. And so it just wasn't that they weren't living in an apartment building like Manila. They were spread out, tents and rock sheep pens and structures and places they fed them. So this is what it looks like. And look what happens in verse 3, chapter 30, verse 3. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was. The center part where their wooden houses, you know, they had, most of the houses were stacked rocks, but they had a wooden beamed roof. And so the wooden part, see what it says in verse 3, was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. Now, can you imagine walking all the way down from the Philistine meeting place, coming over the top of the hill, expecting, well, when I used to come home from work, when our children, we have 8 children, and when our 8 children, they were homeschooled, so Bonnie was a teacher, and they all sat at a long table, and she taught them. And when I would come home for lunch, the kids would all run to the window and be smiling. They'd run to the door. They'd hug me. And that's what fathers expect. So David is coming with his 600 troops, his mighty men, coming to Ziklag, and they get there, and something's wrong. They see in the distance that there's smoke rising. They don't hear any sounds of animals. No kids come running up to them. There's no wives saying, honey, you made it home. I've been cooking dinner all day. Can't wait for you to get here. They didn't smell any food. They just smelled smoke and death. Something was wrong. And it says in verse 3 that all of their sons and their daughters and their wives were gone. And by the way, their animals too. All of the sheepfolds and all the pens were empty. This is what verse 4 says, total loss. Now remember, in this time period, the greatest possession you had was your son who carried on your name. The greatest treasure you had were your children. The greatest delight you had was your wife. And your wealth was the animals that you had. This was the time period. And so everything, his wealth was gone, his joy and pleasure of his wife and family, his future, his descendants, everything is gone. And look what happens in verse 4. It says, then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. Now, I've seen little bits of this. As a pastor over the years, I would be with families when there was car accidents, when there was disasters, when unexpected death of family members, and people just sob. They don't do anything. They can't talk. They can't think. They just cry. Because it's like total loss. You don't know what's happening. You don't have anything else to think about. But it gets worse. Look at verse 5. Because everything is falling apart. Verse 5. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of what? Stoning him. Now, if you've ever been to Israel, and if you're ever out here, there are a lot of stones. It's just like one big stone pile. It's just, I showed you a picture of it. It's just rocks everywhere. And the men were so upset, these warriors with David, they said, you're our leader. You led us up there to the Philistine territory. We didn't guard our family. And we're upset at you. And they're holding these stones. They're thinking of throwing them and harming David. Remember, he's never been injured in any battle. This is the closest David ever got to being injured or killed by his own men. And they were speaking of stoning him because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons, his daughters. But now here is the best verse in 1 Samuel, the end of verse 6. I hope you have it marked, underlined, circled, because for the rest of your life, this is a secret that you should never forget. Verse 6. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Here's the lesson. When everything else fails, when everything else is taken away, when you lose your wealth, when you lose your delights, when you lose your security, when you lose your possessions, when you lose everything, what's the one thing you never lose? The Lord. And he's always there. But David turned to the Lord. Yes, he cried. He was sad. They didn't know where their wives were. They could have been dead. They didn't know where their children were. They could have been dead. They didn't think they'd ever get their wives, their children, or their animals back, their wealth. They thought life had ended. But David, at the very lowest moment, now he's been in caves, he's been on the run, Saul has been trying to get him, all kinds of stuff happening. But David stops right here and strengthens himself in the Lord. By the way, wouldn't you know it? He writes a psalm. David wrote a psalm from this event. Keep reading in verse 7. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. David conquers his grief by trusting in the Lord, and then immediately seeks the Lord for guidance. See, this is why David was a man after God's own heart. David encouraged himself in the Lord, and as soon as he could make a decision, he says, go get the ephod, go get this holy communication. It's kind of like the cell phone to God from the priest. And he says, go get it. I want to know what the Lord wants us to do. And verse 7, Abiathar brought the ephod to David. And verse 8, David inquired of the Lord. David always inquires of the Lord. If you want to know the difference between Saul and David, Saul wouldn't inquire of the Lord. He did his own thing. David always inquired of the Lord. David never made any big decision and most little decisions in his life without inquiring of the Lord. And he said, Lord, what should we do? Verse 8, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them without fail and recover all. Wow. See, David, before he knew the outcome, encouraged himself that God would do everything right, and he trusted the Lord. And then David sought the Lord, and the Lord said, David, you're going to get them all back. Now look what happens. David went, verse 9, he and the 600 men, they came to the brook Besor, where they stayed. Now see, the brook Besor is, it's on your map here, and it's down in the desert. And David comes down like this, and the Amalekites are out here. They're out in the wilderness with all the loot they took from David. And David, look what he does when he comes to this brook Besor, where those stayed who were left behind. David pursued, he and 400 men, verse 10, but 200 stayed behind who were so weary they could not cross the brook. Now watch what happens. This is another part of David's leadership. They found an Egyptian, and they brought him to David, and they fed him, and gave him, verse 12, some food. And David said, to whom do you belong? Verse 13, he said, I'm from Egypt. And verse 14, an invasion in the southern area of the Cherethites in the territory of Judah, of Caleb. Verse 15, can you show me? And verse 16, he brought them down. And look what verse 16 says. So they get this left behind servant of the Amalekites. He leads them to where the camp is, and it says, as far as you could see, in verse 16, they were eating, drinking, dancing because of the great spoil. Now, they hadn't just taken Ziklag. This was a huge number of raiders, and they had come up and attacked the Philistine territory because all the Philistine armies had gone up to fight Saul. And so it wasn't just David that suffered loss. The Philistines had too. And this huge spoil, all the stuff they'd stolen. And look at verse 17. David attacked them from twilight until evening of the next day. This is a 24-hour battle. I mean, they just went at it. And not a man of them escaped except for 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So this huge army, this pillaging army of Amalekites, and by the way, what were these people? Amalekites. You understand that these are all part of the same group that Saul spared. And it's going to show up in the next chapter because an Amalekite kills King Saul. And then David, verse 20, took all the flocks and hands and herds that they had driven before the other livestock and said, this is David's spoil. Now, verse 21, they're coming back. Now, remember, always good to look on a map. They're coming out of the wilderness. They're coming to this brook Besor. And the 200 men that were behind, that were too tired to come, are still sitting there resting by the brook. And look what happens. They came out to meet David, verse 21. And the people greeted them. And then all, verse 22, the wicked and worthless men who went with David answered and said, because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil we have recovered except for their wife and children. Now look at verse 23. This is what marks David's life. But David said, my brethren, notice how gentle he is. He's not harsh. My brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered us in our hand from the troop that came against us. For who will heed you in this matter? Now here's the lesson. David saw God's hand. He said, it's God that delivered us. So here's the rule. as his part, verse 24, who goes down to the battle, so shall his part be who stays by the supplies, they share alike. Now, all of you for a minute, look back at all those flags. You see the flags? The 13 countries Word of Life wants to take the gospel to? Not all of you will get to go. Some of you will stay behind and support those who go there. Some of you will stay behind and pray for those who go there. Some of you will be the ones that help provide for those that go there and even send them things they need. What David said is the people on the front line doing the battle share equally in the rewards God gives as those who stay behind and help them. Not everybody can go to the mission field. Not everybody can go into Metro Manila and work with the homeless people. Some people have to stay home and take care of everything, take care of the children, provide supplies, pray, support the ministry. David said all ministry has two parts, those on the front line and those supporting them from behind. Now, if you're not supporting them from behind, you don't partake of the blessings. But if you do, like Bonnie and I are here, we've been gone for 10 weeks. There is a whole group of people, over 100 people, that support us. They help us with everything. They help us buy our airplane tickets. They help us buy our food. They help us in everything we need. They take care of our home. And most of all, they pray for us. And do you know what the Bible says? Those who are on the front line, us here, equally partake in the blessings with those who stay behind, those who support us. So that's a lesson that David gives. And then when David came to verse 26, Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil to the elders of Judah. So David takes all these treasures away from the raiders and splits them up with his soldiers and comes back to his city and then sends a gift to the leaders of Israel in his tribe, Judah. That's where he was from. Okay, real quickly, let's do Psalm 16 before we have our break because we only have a couple minutes. The life God offers, everybody turn to Psalm 16:11. Okay? Here's what God offers, which David embodies. It's a miktam of David. Those of you that have the little prescript, the superscript, the verse in Hebrew before the verse in English. Miktam, every psalm David wrote that's a miktam is from this time of running for his life. And this is one of them. And there are five or six of them. And this is what David says in 16. Preserve me, O God, for in you I put my trust. That's David, who encouraged himself in the Lord. Verse 5. O Lord, you're the portion. Verse 6. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. What he said is, God, your plan is best. Verse 10. You will not leave my soul in Sheol. You remember we were talking about the grave. David knew he was going there, but he says he had hope of resurrection life. And then here's the best part. The best life possible is in verse 11. And look, there are three points in verse 11. You will show me the path of life, David said. In your presence is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are endless pleasures. David said there are three truths I learned about God as I'm fleeing from the Philistines, when I'm recovering everything from Ziklag. Number one, he says, you arrange my life. You go through life with me. You accompany me. You're the one that authorizes all in life. David said God was the one that provided what he needed in life. Psalm 16:11. It's the same promise the Lord makes to us today.